Well, we've all become affected by the lockdown and coronavirus in various ways. Lots of us now working from home and things like that. Things are heading back to normal, but in some ways things may never be the same again. And as always, there's probably a tax implication to that, I'm guessing. I mean, we had this last time we talked to CKLG accountants, and it was if you worked abroad, or if you're from abroad and you're stuck in this country whilst working for a foreign company. Anyway, to explain it all, as ever, Sarah Tucker from CKLG Accountants joins me on the line. Sarah, hi.
Hello.
How are you doing? You all right?
I'm absolutely fine, thanks, Neil. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah, very good. But this is another angle. Every time you send me through, I think we should talk about this. I'm sitting there thinking, oh no, more stuff that people haven't thought about. So what's the real Easter egg surprise for this month?
What we're finding, actually, is that, you know, the events of the last 12 months, 18 months, has really caused people to stop and think about their life and where they want to be. This working from home is just fantastic, and people don't necessarily want to be cooped up in and sort of living in cities. What the working from home has enabled us all to do is to actually think outside the box and think, actually, I can now go and live in the country and enjoy the country and everything that it offers and work from home. But of course, you know, what that has done is not only has it triggered a real increase in house prices and movements, you know, terrific number of houses have been sold over the last year, aided, of course, by the stamp duty land tax holiday. But what we're also finding is that, you know, we're having clients call up and saying, you know, we've made this lifestyle choice, we're moving to the country, we're going to work from home. And we then get talking to them about the property that they're selling. And most people assume that when you sell your home, it's going to be free of capital gains tax. 9 times out of 10, that is the case, but it's not always the case. For example, if you're already living in a substantial home and the grounds and gardens that home sits in exceeds 1.236 acres, or in sort of modern tongue, it's half a hectare, the land that you've got has to be required to enjoy the house. So if you've got a small property and a huge garden, HMRC might turn around and say, well, you know, what have you done with all that land while you've owned your house? If you've maybe partitioned some of it off with a view to talking to a property developer later on and selling it for property development, don't assume you're going to be able to sell that free of capital gains tax. Or maybe you've fenced off some and have rented it out to locals to use for livery for keeping horses. Again, don't assume that you're going to get that bit of the gain exempt from capital gains tax. Another situation we find is that people move, they sell their house, but they think, actually, I'm going to keep that bit of garden. That could be ripe for development later on. But of course, once you've sold the house, you've sold the home, you haven't got the trappings of what we call main residence relief to attach it to that bit of garden you've left behind.
Right.
So go and expect a tax bill. Just don't assume without talking to somebody for professional advice that you're going to sell your home without a tax bill.
Couple of questions on that then. When you look at the value of a home in that way, obviously when you sell your main residence, the vast majority of the value of that is the actual bricks and mortar and the lovely, lovely kitchen you had done and the fantastic amount of money you spent on that walk-in shower and these things. So you may have a big garden, and obviously that could account for a lot of the overall value of the property. But in terms of capital gains tax, do they just price it at a sort of per square foot of turf type calculation?
What we normally do is actually get a professional valuer involved to put a value on the house and a value on the garden and what the garden's used for. And we then apportion the base cost based on those values. And in doing that, you recognise that the value put on the house, the gain that's attributable to the house, would hopefully be exempt under main residence relief, leaving the rest chargeable to capital gains tax. Now, you made an interesting point there, Neil, about renovation work that we all carry out whilst we live in our homes. I've had a lovely new kitchen during lockdown because I've been forced to stay put and make some decisions, which is just which is great. But it has required internal works to our house, jigging around walls, structural works to hold up chimney stacks that we've got. And all of those costs that you incur throughout the time that you own your property are deemed to be enhancement costs. And if it is evident when you sell the property that that works are still reflected in the sale price that you're going to achieve, then you'll get tax relief for them. So it's desperately important, you know, when you do major renovation works, I'm not talking about repairs and maintenance here.
No, but if it's a fixer-upper.
Substantial works.
Yeah, a fixer-upper type thing.
Totally. Yeah, totally. Yeah, you're enhancing the value, and then it's a good idea to keep a note of have a spreadsheet. I've got one, won't surprise you, of everything we've spent over the last year on our home. Just in case, you know, our thoughts change and we decide to then move away, or we move away for work purposes, or maybe we decide to keep this and rent it out, or, you know, circumstances change. Nobody knows what might happen in the future.
Okay, and of course you've got a spreadsheet, and I bet yours has got tabs, hasn't it? So,
oh, it's got lots of worksheets.
Of course it has. What about these? I mean, there's a real trend for garden offices, aren't there, and things like that. What about that? How does that affect what you do?
Well, I think the thing to be careful with there is that if you have installed a garden office, or you've converted a room over to office space, like I've done at home, if it has a dual purpose, like I'm actually sitting in the smallest bedroom we've got in our house, which is an office, but also we double it up as a bedroom, providing it's got that dual purpose, then it won't affect your main residence. So, you know, my hairdresser, for example, has a hair hut at the end of the garden. It's amazing. I go there and have my hair cut. But she's also got a sofa bed in her hair hut. And she puts up friends, has her teenage boys down there, relatives, and she uses that extra space as part of her home. So if you have that dedicated space that is not specifically used and entirely used for business, then that shouldn't affect your main residence relief. The flip side to all of that is that if you did have a dedicated area, like, for example, I'm helping some clients at the moment that are selling their home, that's half of it has been used as a restaurant for many years. They've then over the latter few years actually assumed everything to be their home. But we know that in terms of the floor space that's been used entirely as a business for a substantial period of time, we're going to have to pay a bit of tax on that bit. So again, it requires some calculations. So the key thing is to not make any particular area. Don't assign it entirely for business use. Make sure you've got that duality of purpose. So you're using it for business reasons, but you're also using it for private reasons as well.
Okay. Now, the other side of this is also that a lot of people furloughed or maybe even have now lost their jobs. So to make ends meet, they've perhaps taken in lodgers or something like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, that's a perfectly well-established way of supplementing your income and supplementing the cost of the house. How does that affect things?
Now, that's an interesting one, actually, because if the rent that you're getting from taking in lodgers doesn't exceed the rent-a-room allowance of £7,500, then again, that's fine. You can receive your up to £7,500 rents per tax year, free of tax, free of income tax, which is great news, but also that won't affect your main residence relief exemption. But if you've got a substantial property and you have let out more rooms, and maybe you're running it more as a bed and breakfast, then you'll have that duality of purpose, and your main residence relief would be restricted. I think the important thing to bear in mind that actually is if you are still obviously occupying your home and have taken lodgers in, and your rents exceed that £7,500, you can get an extra relief called lettings relief. And this will exempt to the capital gain. It's capped at 40,000, or the amount of the gain which is attributed to the period of letting. But the key condition is now, this was changed back in April 2000, is that you must live with those lodgers prior to April 2000, you could have this relief even if you weren't living in your home and you let it out. But you now actually have to live with your lodgers and share your facilities with those lodgers to claim that relief.
Perish the thought. Right, just briefly. Yes, exactly. Just briefly, anything else that people should watch out for? Because it always sounds like there's something designed there to trip you up.
Yeah, I think there is actually. I think if you've had to have periods away from your home, you know, maybe you've owned your home for a long time and you travelled for a bit, you then were taken away from your home and required to live elsewhere in the UK or overseas for business reasons, and then you let out your house during that period. Providing you had a period of time before you were absent from your home and you reoccupied your home as your home around those periods of absences, there are time periods where you can get extra relief. So for example, you can be away from your home for 3 years for any reason whatsoever, albeit traveling, or we used to travel, but maybe not traveling so much, but maybe away from your home because you've had to care for loved ones throughout this difficult time. Or you've had to be away maybe for work reasons. If it's in the UK, you can have 4 years. If it's overseas, it's unlimited. But actually, if you're prevented from reoccupying your home because of work reasons, then generally private residence relief is extended. So that's something to bear in mind as well. So, you know, don't assume that just because you've been away from your home and you only have that one home, that the main residence relief will continue throughout. There's another it's not really a sting, it's just something to be aware of, is that, you know, those individuals out there that are lucky to have two homes and they do spend their time between those two homes. Certainly there's quite a few retired people then that, you know, we have as clients that, you know, have a home in Cambridge, say, for example, and then, you know, a home maybe on the coast, and they do divide their time between the two. Within 2 years of acquiring a second home, you can make an election and send this off to HMRC and say, this property is going to be my home. Now you have to at that point assess which property you think is going to accrue the most gain, because that's where you want your main residence relief to sit. If you don't make this election, then HMRC will determine which is your home based on facts. So it's not absolutely vital, because factually it might work out for you, but it's difficult to maybe within 2 years of acquiring second home, make a decision as to where you think you're going to spend your time. But there is an option to make this election. But generally, it's not actually about the time you spend in your home. It's about the quality of the occupation. So if you and your family are living in a home as your home, your children are being schooled locally, you're on the electoral roll of the village that you're living in or the town you're living in, you use the facilities there, the doctors, etc. You go to church there, maybe. These are all the pulls that will determine where is your home. It's the quality of where you live rather than the quantity of time you spend there. So that's another thing to bear in mind.
Right, my goodness me. As always, there's so much to that. People think it's as easy and straightforward, and it can be, but always worth taking advice, because you don't want to be coming back to this stuff later in life and finding there's a clumping great bill. So as always, the advice is talk to your accountant, yes?
Yes, please do. And don't forget that actually, you know, if you know that you haven't lived in your home for your entire period of ownership, just, you know, call your accountant, call us, let us help you determine how much tax, if any, that is payable. Because don't forget, we have 30 days now to tell HMRC about a capital gain on a residential property and pay that tax. Now, that's no time at all to actually look back over the entire period of ownership where you've got homes that are in for maybe 40, 50 years. And, you know, people have been in and out of them for various reasons. And to gather all the information and, time spent when, where, and how, and what, and why. 30 days is not a lot of time to actually do the maths and get the facts.
There you go. Wise words as always. Sarah, lovely to catch up with you. Love to everybody at CKLG. Thanks very much indeed for coming on today. Take care.